We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Wanna take me cruising on an ocean liner to places I long to see? Well, with my champagne taste in your beer bottle pocket, don't forget to write me when you get there in your rowboat, when you paddle across the sea without me. Do you see us dining on caviar and pheasant with descendants of royalty? Well, with my champagne taste in your beer bottle pocket, I'll be having pheasant while you're dining with the peasants, dunking donuts in a diner without me. You said you have ambition to make my dream come true. Well, brother, you just keep right on wishing, and all of my dreams will come true without you. Do you see me in a Jaguar with all the accessories, and one of those accessories is you? Well, with my champagne taste and your beer bottle pocket, take back your Jaguar, accessories, etc., and drive back into your dreamland without me. And if I wanted diamonds, you'd offer me breakfast at Tiffany's and luncheon at Cartier's, you'd recommend. Well, with my champagne taste and your beer bottle bucket, you will have to work on something better than a zircon, because your diamonds are this girl's worst friend. You said you'd promise me anything to make my life a feast. You didn't give me anything. Not even arpege, you beast. And it wouldn't surprise me if a lady like Godiva had someone like you to give her the stall. For with her champagne taste and your beer bottle pocket, when she couldn't get those dresses, she just let down all her tresses and forgot she was a lady after all. So if you want me to be a part of your permanent employ, before my champagne fizzles, come up with a real McCoy. Show me you can separate the man from the boy, and bring me a constant life of champagne taste and joy.
All right, here we go. Snacky Tunes. Welcome. Terry Diabolic.
What was that pause?
I'm having trouble hearing stuff in my headphones. Can you hear me?
I can hear you because you're sitting next to me.
All right, fair enough. Welcome to Snacky Tunes on this crisp fall winter day. Not fall, crisp winter day. We have a great show today. Actually, this is one of the shows I've been more excited about. We are joined by Jordana Rothman today.
Hi.
Hi. Of Time Out New York, who has been on this show before.
That's right.
With Pat LaFrieda, Mark Pastore from Pat LaFrieda.
And we wanted to bring Jordana in order to talk about. Oh, there I am.
Headphones.
Hey, there we go.
We wanted to bring Jordana in to talk about you know, what had happened in 2009 as food trends, and then looking to the past and looking to the future, which is always interesting to see what predictions were made and what came true, and then to again predict what might happen. And, you know, Jordana has been a great resource to us for last year, and she is an excellent food writer. And so, Jordana, welcome officially.
Thank you so much.
And this will be a podcast and archive, so we can even see a year from now.
Oh, God, you're going to hold me to my...
We're going to hold you
to know
it.
What? Let's say it right now. We're bringing you back next year.
Oh, yeah.
No. And we're going to hold you to it.
So this is the first annual.
I got to change everything I was going to talk about.
Stop the show. People will continue to eat food and drink.
Yeah. That's my prediction.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, because this list was mostly just wish fulfillment, so.
That's fine. I mean, what's the point of making predictions if you're not going to dream big?
So, exactly. Well, exactly. So, I like that process.
Before we get to the future, let's take a year back. We need like a wind chime. Like, let's go back to 2009.
Last year, as everyone knows, the economy dumped and hit the fan in a shit sort of way the same time. And I would say that while the restaurant industry is fickle, it was disastrous last year for so many people. I mean, I think there was a time back in like March and April where it was just left and right. It was just closing. Anyone who was on the edge or in a margin shut down.
That's right. You know, I think a lot of people will tell you that 2009 was sort of a depressing year in food. And I think to a certain extent, that's correct. I mean, we lost some of our most beloved restaurants. We lost Chanterelle, which is just a huge blow for the fine dining community. Fleur de Sel, I mean, like you said, I mean, any restaurant that was sort of teetering on the edge is just lost to history at this point. So, and, you know, fine dining just took a gigantic blow. And that's sort of a sad thing in a city that has supported that culture for so long. But at the same time, it's kind of exciting. It was kind of cool to see the way that the high-end chefs were able to sort of adapt to the economy and just tweak the experience of dining in their restaurants so that it's affordable and accessible to like a wider range of wallets, which was really the key of 2009, I think. So sad, but also kind of exciting.
So what were some of the restaurants that you saw that really tweaked and helped out?
Yeah, well, I think value across the board was something of interest to all of the restaurants, whether they were extremely high end in the manner of like Tom Colicchio at Kraft. He introduced price fixed menus, like he did something called Frugal Fridays. It was very popular. Mm-hmm. Even Jean George had a restaurant called Matsugen, very elegant Japanese restaurant in Tribeca. He did like a $35 fixed menu, which was very popular and really delicious. And I mean, this is Jean George. I mean, he has a history of, you know, doing things that are accessible, but I think to really downscale such a beautiful restaurant is kind of a game changer. And then Danielle Boulou. I mean, Danielle Boulou opened a sausage restaurant in the East Village, and that's a turning point, man.
We ate there.
Yeah,
you like it?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, I didn't like all the sausages.
Yeah,
but I mean, we had a great meal there. It was actually with Patrick from Heritage.
Oh yeah,
he took us there, and I was like, this is fantastic. Also, it's like DBGB, which is our initials, so what's to hate?
Personal
attachment.
But yeah. I think as a diner, especially something like that, it made me think about what I was ordering more and like what value was, in a way where I go, oh, I'm here, it's going to cost X amount, and I'm expected to pay.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, I'm walking into this Rooster restaurant, so that's like $200 right there. And then I was like, well, what am I actually getting?
Right.
And I think that there was sort of more collaboration between the diner and the chef this past year. Of just like, what are we getting? Because we're going to, you know, we got to go out and eat. But like, how are you bringing us in?
Well, and I think that speaks to the value argument again. I mean, I feel like everyone says this every year, but the comfort food invasion. I mean, this year it was like a banner year for comfort food, from fried chicken, which was in every kitchen from Momofuku to La Conda Verde. And really high-end, beautiful pizzas, Neapolitan pizzas at Caste and Motorino and Roberta's.
Thank you, Roberta's.
Thank you, Roberta's. But, you know, the idea of, again, just value in your food. Though I will say that there are restaurants that opened in 2009 that were fine dining restaurants that I think sort of paved the way for restaurateurs in 2010 to step in and still create places that are expensive and serious restaurants, like Marea, I think, is a great example of that. You know, Marea is Michael White's pasta and seafood restaurant on Central Park. It's beautiful, it's expensive, it's serious, but it thrived. It's been packed since it opened. So, you know, I think that there's a scale, and I do think that places like Marea will continue to open as the recession starts to rebound.
And you know, saying that, is that a New York sort of only like trend bucker? Because I know that New York is a very tough place to judge the mm-hmm. economy as a whole, because it's the city of the world, and mm-hmm. you have so much money coming in from other places in the world that have nothing to do that with the like American economy. So you have a place like Cortana, it's like a 4-star restaurant that opens up, and you can have people, international people coming in, whose money's doing much better than the dollar, and mm-hmm. support that. Did you find that, you know, across the board that this was true for the American dining scene, or like was New York and like LA and like the big yeah. cities the only ones that could really open up these major restaurants?
You know, I'm a provincial gal. You know? I'm a New York gal, so I can't speak to the country at large. But I would say from my provincial Brooklyn Nights standpoint that New York does support this kind of economy more so than anywhere else, whether it's a recession or otherwise. I think that, you know, New York, LA, San Francisco, a few other cities that don't necessarily warrant mention, they support a dining culture, and there are people that even if they're scrimping and saving are willing to go out and spend money.
It's an escape.
So you mentioned Roberta's, but mm-hmm. Roberta's also kind of speaks larger to the growth of Brooklyn, or even more than growth, just the cementing of Brooklyn as a culinary place. Mm-hmm. I mean, we exist here. We shoot the show here. Sam lives here. But, I mean, it's changed. There's more and more restaurants, especially around where we live, that yeah. we can just go to eat that's just, if not on par, but better food, cheaper, because it's in Brooklyn. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that explosion.
Yeah, I think 2009 just solidified Brooklyn as the epicenter of enlightened eating in New York. I mean, there's nowhere else in New York where there are as many people who are invested in what they're eating, in where what they're eating is coming from, as Brooklyn. It's really amazing the community that's developed and really solidified in 2009. I'm a South Brooklyn gal, you know, but I do want to give a particular shout out to Williamsburg, because I think that of all of the areas, it's on fire here. I mean, people, Roberta's is sort of like a clubhouse for this sort of thing. And I think there's so many restaurants that have popped up to suit this new kind of enlightened dining public in this area. So it's very exciting. And of course, all the supper clubs, which we haven't even talked about. But I think that sort of a lot is radiating out from this area.
I think, one of the Franks from Frankie's is yeah. doing a supper club, and they were also just highlighted in Food and Wine this yeah. month, which is just to open the page and to see just, I mean, that's Brooklyn
yeah.
front and center. And if, you know, those, I mean, them and like Prime Meats is just sort of really just what you couldn't ask for a better meal anywhere in the city
mm-hmm.
of just, you know, anything from just pizza to like steaks and seafood and just vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all in our back door, which, you know, 4-5 years ago, mm-hmm. if you're going out,
when we first moved here, it was mostly like Puerto Rican, Spanish places on
Chinese yeah. food Chinese and food. Asian food, and just like
over where I live, just Italian restaurants, old like Italian clubhouses and things. But yeah, the Franks are a great example of this, and I mean the Franks have had some credibility for the last few years with Frankie's 457, and you know they've been doing well. I mean, they're not just bursting onto the scene or anything, but this was a huge year for them. You mentioned Prime Meats. That was a gigantic critical success. I live in that area, and we're talking like hour and a half waits. I go there in the morning, and it's like a bustling breakfast clubhouse. And then even down the street, like Buttermilk Channel, another great restaurant, 2-hour waits on Friday nights. It's really unprecedented in this borough, and people are coming from Manhattan to come eat here, and why not? I mean, this is the center of things in terms of food.
And I think it's, you know, and because we're more involved in the Brooklyn food community, but it really is a community. I get more of a feeling of mm-hmm. we're, you know, we're in this together, and we'll see if that feeling lasts once, you know, it becomes cemented and someone goes, well, I don't need you, because now that like Brooklyn's on the map, we don't need to like help each other out. But I feel more than the Manhattan feel,
mm-hmm.
it is a clubhouse out here. It is mm-hmm. like, this is what we're doing together.
I don't know what form it will take when it reaches Manhattan. I don't know that it will have the same mood as it has in Brooklyn, because you're right. In Brooklyn, it's friendly. It's like, these are people that you know. These are people that you see and you break bread with, you know. But in Manhattan, there's more of a sprawl. The communities are much more diverse. So I don't know what form it'll take. But I would love to be able to see a crossover and be able to kind of create a food community citywide that we can participate in.
And, you know, speaking of different areas that have grown, you know, we had spoken about before, it's not just Brooklyn that's kind of solidified, but you touched on the slow return of the meatpacking district.
Right.
Which is funny because I mean, if I could, you know, I tried to go eat there a few months ago, and I was like, I just can't even begin to think about where to touch on. So
it's like eating in a disco.
Yeah.
It really is. But.
I would love to hear your thoughts as a rise, because when you say rise, it means you were there before and then you left and now you're willing to go back.
I'm going to tell you this.
Okay.
I'm not going to be the champion of the meatpacking district 100%. This is not a place that I flock to necessarily. But as a writer and as somebody who tracks openings and is deeply involved with the goings on in the restaurant scene, I've definitely seen movement in that area that previously just didn't exist. I mean, even Scarpetta, which is sort of like cuspy, I think it opened maybe the end of 2008, but really got traction in 2009. That, again, is a serious restaurant with an excellent, talented chef. That is not a place that, you know, the ladies in their stilettos like cackle into before they go out to whatever club that I can't even conjure the name of because I live in Brooklyn. But and then the Standard Grill, I don't know if you guys have had a chance to get out there, but I really like that restaurant. It's simple. It's you know, a welcoming place for folks like us. And for that matter, all of the concessions in that hotel, the Standard Hotel, are excellent. There's a beer garden with sausages from Kurt Gunterbrunner. That's credibility. Those are names that you want to visit. A lot of people have been excited about Bill's Barn Burger. I've yet to be fully inculcated into that, but I think it's still of note, and it's bringing new diners who are interested in what they're putting in their bodies into the area. So that's good movement. It's the Meatpacking District.
That's the Meatpacking District. All right, so we are going to play a short song, take a bit of a breath, and then we're going to come back with Jordana and talk about 2010, the future. And then later on the show, we have a wonderful call-in from one of our favorite bands, Yacht, who put together a special mini mix for us. So you're listening to Snacky Tunes. Big shout out to Roberta's, who is our sponsor today for the pizza, and Whole Foods, who's also our sponsor today. Go visit them. We will be there actually picking up dinner tonight after the show. Big shout out to Jack Inslee and Rec Tech for making us sound good. And Terry, take it away. You're listening to Snacky Tunes with your host Finger on the Pulse. Today we have Jordana Rothman from Time Out New York talking to us about the past and present food trends
in
Brooklyn and New York City. Hello. So we're in East Coast City.
Mm-hmm.
You're a Brooklyn girl.
Mm-hmm.
But you smell an invasion on the horizon 2010.
That's right.
And it's not from across the pond. It's just from across the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is actually something I'm very excited about, this West Coast invasion. We've already seen some sort of opening riffs of this San Francisco, LA presence here with places like Northern Spy Food Company, which was opened by two veterans of a restaurant in San Francisco called A16, and also Dos Toros Taqueria, which I think is totally undersung and delicious, from two guys from Berkeley.
Wait a second. Are we talking California-style tacos in New York City?
Mm-hmm. Okay. On 4th Avenue.
I'm going to say that this is the first time I'm hearing about this, and you know how I feel about Mexican food, little disappointed.
I think it's been open for a few months, so I'm going to say a little behind the times.
I've been a little
Got to get out there.
Yeah, I got to get out
Not
there.
Really finger on the pulse.
Get that finger back on the pulse.
But yeah, so California Invasion.
Well, so, you know, I think there's already this kind of strong kinship between California cooking and, you know, specifically San Francisco cooking and really Brooklyn. I think that was really explicitly stated a few months ago. There was a supper club series here in Brooklyn. It was like in an Airstream trailer, I think, behind Diner, maybe. And there was, you know, it was a collaboration between San Francisco chefs and Brooklyn chefs. And I think the idea of there being this kinship, the stylistic kinship between the two, was really the meat and the philosophy behind that dinner. And 2010 is going to be big. It's going to get real.
I think everyone feels that way about 2010 in general. I think everyone feels an upswing.
Well, have you heard the name Nate Appleman?
No.
This is new. Okay, well, Nate Appleman was a chef of A16 in San Francisco. He's collaborating with Keith McNally to do a pizzeria, which is sort of catty-corner to Whole Foods Bowery, which is our sponsor today. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of chatter about this place. The pre-opening buzz is ridiculous. Like, I think Nate tweeted a photo of some pizza the other day, and people just went, you know, like off the rails. I'm so excited about it.
I'm going to say that a 2009 trend was that pizza really exploded.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that New York needs another high-end pizzeria?
You know, it's a good question. It's a good question. And I think typically I would probably say jump the shark. But we're talking about Keith McNally and we're talking about Nate Appleman. This guy's a very talented chef and California credentials. I think he won a James Beard Award, or he was up for a James Beard Award. So, I mean, it's pretty exciting. Keith McNally, his concepts are incredibly tight. So I think we'll probably have a winner on our hands.
All right. I'm just, you know,
yeah,
with Co and all those places, just I'm not saying you can't get to a point where everything's mm-hmm. been done with pizza, but you know,
I think you can get to that point. I think we're at the point.
I'm only not saying that because of, you know, we're sitting in Roberta's, whose pizza I love. You know,
yeah.
I've been to Marino. You know, I've done the whole pizza thing, and you know, what's it, Mazza or Mario Vitale's place?
Yeah,
and just like it gets to a point where it's like, okay, pizza. Mm-hmm. Like high-end ingredients, homemade sausage,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, again, this plays back to your idea of comfort food, but, you know, is comfort food going to reach a saturating point for 2010? Is there a point where I've had all the fried chicken, I've had all the falafel, I've had hot dogs,
you touch on a very salient point, which is that the pendulum is always swinging. You know, we've hit comfort food, you know, saturation point before, and we've gone back to fine dining. I mean, I think that there is this possibility for fine dining to make something of a comeback in 2010 and in the years hence, which is sort of what we talked about earlier with Maria kind of paving the way. Jonathan Benno from Per Se was the executive chef there, and he's going to be opening a new project. I don't know too many details about it yet, but it'll be very exciting. Obviously, very talented chef, and it will be high end. You know, so I think you're right. I think that this is sort of clearing the way for people to want to the grandeur of dining out again, right? You don't just want pizza
no,
and beer.
No, you don't.
Ben, speaking of pendulum swinging, you know, what are your thoughts on the rise of cocktails in the 2000s? I mean, it really went from, there was an article in the New York Times this past weekend about mm-hmm. how we entered in with like the sugary vodka drinks. Mm-hmm. And then obviously we've seen just this huge explosion of this and, you know, going from just, you know, drinking whatever to secret clubs and passwords to, you know, your best friend knowing, you know, how to make a perfect, you know, old fashioned,
mm-hmm.
from like an 1880s recipe.
Right. Well, we were talking about this a little earlier, Greg and I, and I think that if you've read my work or read Time Out recently, you know that I am a huge proponent of the cocktail movement. I really support what's been going on there and cocktails as sort of a slow food, almost development. At the same time, I am sort of tired of having my cocktails in speakeasies. I want to be able to have a good drink and not need like a secret handshake to do it, you know? So I think that's something that we could see in 2010, where the cocktail movement is going to sort of take a deep breath and calm down a little bit. And we're going to be able to have bars that are really focusing on techniques and ingredients and not so much kind of the, you know, the straightness of their bow ties and, you know, the rattle of their phonographs or whatnot.
And I think I have to agree with you. I won't say where, but a few weeks ago I was out at one of the more respected cocktail places, and they infused their own spirits, and I just wanted the infused spirit. I didn't want to deal with the whole cocktail. Mm-hmm. I was like, you make it on your own. I just want this neat. And they took a little offense.
Yeah.
And I was like, look, like this is like, it was the first time where I'd been one of those bars. I was like, look, I'm coming here to drink what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And while I will order as many cocktails as I can fit down my throat, right now I just want something very simple, very clean. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I don't want a whole meal.
Well, you know what? That's the problem. I think that's one of my problems with this sort of speakeasy thing is that I don't want it to be intimidating. I don't want it to be intimidating to drinkers who might otherwise just go to some dive in the East Village and order a vodka tonic and call it a night. I want people to be able to have the experience of serious cocktails made with tasty, delicious artisanal products and fresh juices and not feel like they're uncool if they don't know what's in a Martinez. You know, so I think that makes a good point. And also, if you want to actually have a good cocktail in an interesting spot, I would recommend the Randolph on Broome. I've been really into this place lately.
You've been telling me about it, but I have yet to go.
Yeah. I don't know. This is sort of touching upon what I'm talking about. It opened, I think, in late 2008, but it's gained traction this year. It's like a dive bar for all intents and purposes, but they do a good cocktail. And that's what I want. I want to be comfortable and well lubricated.
One question. Pricing on cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know they can get upwards of $15, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think an appropriate, well done type of cocktail like this should cost?
Well, I would say around $12 or $13, I think. I know it's expensive, but here's the thing that you have to keep in mind. You are not drinking, you know, your watered down two ingredient highball when you're drinking these cocktails. They're potent, they're dangerous, you know, they're really intense. It's all liquor, and you don't have eight of them. You have
Instead of drinking eight singles, you drink three or four doubles or triples,
right? You know, you have to have a little bit more self-control with these cocktails, and that's actually, you know, people that are not used to drinking like that are in for kind of a trip the first time they go.
Right. We have a lot of friends with this. You're also, what I found interesting when we were talking about this before, you're making, you're betting kind of the money on the rise of tiki
cocktails,
which kind of struck me, because to me, when I think tiki, I just think like kind of cheesy, like umbrellas.
Well, that's the effect of age, you know. Tiki had a huge moment in the 50s and 60s. It was like, it was incredibly popular. And yes, it is kitschy and it is playful, but listen, like Trader Vic's, I don't know if you're familiar, like there is a lot of fun, whimsical food and drink that came out of that trend, and it was bastardized with the addition of like super lots of sugar and pre-made mixes and things like that. But when you make a kitschy tiki drink with aged rum and fresh juices and real responsible products, it's delicious and it's fun and playful. And I think that sort of plays into what we're talking about, that I want the cocktail movement to get a little bit less serious, and I see it happening. And there's two places that are actually opening this year that I think will speak to that trend. The Hurricane Club, which is on Park Avenue. And that's...
Hurricane,
oh
like...
Oh my God, I want a highbrow Hurricane so bad.
Like
that'd be good.
Bourbon Street Hurricane. Yeah. No, but, you know,
yeah,
high-end.
High-end. But this is actually operated...
Like half
this
one.
Is a restaurant. This is a restaurant. Of course, I'm sure they'll do cocktails as well, but it's from the gang behind Park Avenue Winter. This is a great
really?
Restaurant. Yeah, great restaurant. Craig Koketsu, talented chef, really good-looking.
Your eyes went a little dreamy right there.
Stuff. And then, of course, Richard Boccato from Dutch Kills is also opening sort of a Polynesia-themed bar. I think it's called The Painkiller, and that's going to be in the old East Side Company space, so that's also going to kind of be a tiki theme. I think people are going to love it.
But didn't the Rusty Knot last year, if I remember, didn't they do like some like blended drinks, and that was sort of like a big, like, we have three blenders on hand.
Yeah,
for...
you know what? You're right. They did do it there, and actually the bartender behind those drinks is Toby Maloney. A very well-known bartender in Chicago and a very talented guy. But I don't know. I don't know why that did. I mean, it was, you know what? That was a really popular bar, so maybe it did.
It was a popular bar, and it took off. Speaking of names,
mm-hmm.
what names are we looking for? Because you just rattled off a few names.
Ooh.
But 2010, there's, you know, there's the chefs,
right?
But then there's also like the bartenders, the restaurateurs,
the moguls,
the front of the house,
the dynasties,
right? Well, in 2009, it was all about Michael Bao opening like a baguette and on every single corner in every single neighborhood. Everybody knew his name. He's really on the make. Danny Meyer made a lot of moves in 2009. He was opening Shake Shacks all over the world. But I'm really into this guy who's a little bit of a quieter tycoon, I call him. His name is Ravi DeRossi. He is involved in some places that you definitely know. Mayoel, Desnuda, All in the East Village, The Bourgeois Pig. Places, again, with serious credibility, great drinks, great vibe. And he is actually going to be opening a Cuban sandwich shop, I think maybe this week, called Cienfuegos. Five fires. And
thank you.
That's going to be the first phase of a larger project in that space. It's going to be a rum punch bar and then a Cuban restaurant. And he's just on the move. He's really, I find him to make very smart moves in his little East Village empire, growing it slowly. But every location has something that really makes it distinct and different, as Mayoel had the tequila focus. I'm very excited to see what he does next. I think he's really someone that you need to know.
Before I step back up onto the decks,
yep.
You're going to say it now because we're going to check it a year from now.
Uh-oh.
What's the ingredient and what's the dish trend? Two-parter of 2010.
Yeah, that was going to be my question too.
Oh, yeah.
Twins.
I think we are going to continue seeing a huge amount of Italian regionalization, Roman food. This has been observed, but I'm going to say it again here. And I think more of like the quinto, quarto, like offal movement, like getting a little bit more democratized in Italian restaurants around the city.
Awesome. Jordana, I want to thank you for this. This was great. I mean, maybe you can share this email with people, but she put this all into a beautiful email. I don't know if you have your own. You can't do it on timeout, but your own place. But if you write Jordana, maybe she'll share this with you because it's really concise and it's got a lot of, I mean, you can spend the first 6 months eating from all these places.
Yeah, that's right.
And spend the next 6 months eating from the 2010 places.
Mm-hmm. And then check in with me halfway through. I'll give you some more recommendations.
Check in through. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I look forward to, or we look forward to spending a number of meals and events together with you.
Cheers.
Then we'll have you back.
I'll be back.
Absolutely.
At least in 2011, probably before then. And yeah, Terry is going to drop us a track. We got Yacht coming up in the next 5 minutes with Expresso Mix. And we're going to tear into this food, which has just been sitting here, being ignored, impossibly. So you're listening to Snacky Tunes with your host, Finger on the Pulse. This is Yacht.
See a penny pickup and I'll take us what to do. Uh-oh. I just lost $100, betting it all against love. Uh-oh.
That was See a Penny, Pick It Up. Jonna, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Can I call that a throwback? Has it been enough years?
Yes, it's been enough years. Claire is also here, too. We're both here. We are here.
Hey, Claire.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, guys.
How can we serve you? What can we do for you? How can we make you better?
Well, I'd like to wish you a Happy New Year.
Thank you. We'd like to return the wish.
Oh.
Happy New Year to you.
And welcome back from the glorious and impressive world tour.
Thank you.
How was spreading the message? How are the receivers?
The receivers were willing and able.
Beautiful.
It was a real honor to be with them around the world.
Yes. When did you get back?
I think we got back on December 21st. I know we got back on December 21st.
On the equinox, if you will. Can I say that?
Mm-hmm.
I can say that. So tour was good. We haven't seen you. For any of you who were living under a rock, we did a show called Dinner with the Band, and Yacht was our season finale. I don't know if you guys caught it because you might have been on the road, but it was our favorite episode. I'll say that.
Oh,
on air.
That's really sweet.
To all the bands.
That's really sweet, though.
I mean, I do.
Even if you do say that to everyone, that's fine. That's really sweet. Thank you.
And I'll tell you why. I know we talk a lot about food on here, but for those of you who don't know, Yada is vegan. You guys are vegan.
And
when we pitched a vegan band, they were like, I don't know how that's going to go because, you know, cooking shows are usually about, you know, even vegetarianism, but. Your dish was one of the best-looking dishes as well, because those chicken-in-the-wood mushrooms.
Awesome. Yeah, those are great mushrooms.
But I wanted to know, you guys went around the world as vegans, and for some cultures that might not be vegetarian or even vegan-friendly, I'm curious what you ate on your international tour. Highlights, lowlights, midlights?
There were lots of highlights and lots of lowlights. I mean, it's kind of a difficult journey to be a vegan abroad. Some countries are a lot easier than others. Japan, for example, is nearly impossible, whereas most European countries are totally cool. We ate amazing food in China. We did a two-week Chinese tour, and luckily we had an interpreter that spoke fluent Mandarin, and he negotiated for literally for hours with restaurateurs to get us food that was vegan, because
it's really not
a concept there at
all. The thing with China, they would be like, no, it's the meat is free. You don't have to pay extra for it. Why wouldn't you want the meat?
It comes in the dish. No, you're not going to like it if there's no meat.
Oh, if you don't get the meat in it, it's going to be terrible. Why would you want that?
That's what we're imagining they were saying, of course, because we couldn't understand anything that was going on. But we ate some awesome, some hot pots, some amazing Szechuan hot pots, some cool exotic spices.
We had some great eggplants. Yeah.
Some great tofu.
What's that pepper that you love? Is it just...
Oh, Szechuan pepper. Are you guys growing Szechuan pepper here in this enterprise?
They're like peppercorn.
No.
Not really a pepper.
Jordana said yes.
Yeah,
and it makes your mouth numb in this insane way, and it's part of Szechuan cooking. It's like they have numb and spicy food. That's kind of the signature of Szechuan cooking, and it's a really bizarre feeling. It's like the numbness makes the spicy food sweeter and less difficult to eat, but at the same time, you can hardly taste anything because your mouth is just tingling, and if you eat enough of it, you totally get high.
Huh.
And we brought back a bag of these peppers for our friends.
Oh, really? Uh-oh.
They're essentially like a band, but instead of making music, they cook, and they're called Hot Knives. And they are awesome. Yeah, you guys should check them out. UrbanHonking.com/hotknives.
Done. Urban Honking, you say?
Yes.
Okay.
That's a website that I built with a couple of my friends.
It's
essentially like a TV network of blogs. that we started in 2001 before blogs existed. Oh. They invented blogs. We invented blogs.
That is certified. So you're thinking that some of these people, you literally introduced them to the concept of veganism on tour?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. But I don't think anybody that we met was like, oh, you can be vegan? I'm going to change my lifestyle. It was more like, who are these weirdos?
Yeah, I think that they maybe thought it was a singular instance of just two crazy people. They didn't, I don't think that they thought that there was a culture around it or people that also eat like that.
Yeah, they were like, something is wrong with these people.
Yeah, one trick that we use also is saying that we have allergies.
People will sometimes be like, oh, yeah, whatever. Let's put the milk in it anyway, or the shrimp or something, and then we have, like, a real grounds to act scandalized. But if we eat this, we'll get sick.
How dare you? This is my life we're talking about.
So, addition to food on the road, how were the shows? And what were the more memorable performances that you played in the more exciting settings?
Seoul, South Korea. Just going to places that we had never been before. Going to small towns in China and small towns in South Korea. Places that... Well, we would sit back and kind of zoom out and imagine ourselves on a Google map, and it was really strange to be in a place that we never thought we would ever find our human bodies. So, yeah, Seoul, South Korea was especially special because it was Claire's birthday, and the kids made us a vegan cake that we passed around to this audience of 400 or 500 people. It was really amazing.
Yeah, it was
just crazy. It was crazy to go to these small corners of the world, and because of the magic of the internet, people knew our songs and knew the words to the songs, and we were just completely overwhelmed.
Do they know any English besides the word to your songs and other songs?
Yeah. Surprisingly, people around the world know how to speak English.
Right, no,
they
I
just feel like assholes a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit.
We don't know.
Like,
we don't
sorry.
Know Mandarin, and we don't know Korean, so...
I went to Berlin a couple years ago, and I tried to order eggs, and that is not an English-friendly country. And I brought the waitress to tears because I was just trying to say the word sun and eggs for, like, sunny-side-up eggs, and that just did not translate, and I felt like a total asshole. Like, I was like, I'm just trying to get some food in here. Sorry.
Right.
And how
tears?
Yeah.
Tears?
Yeah, tears. No, seriously. I have a witness. My girlfriend at the time will witness that there were tears in this woman's eye because she was so frustrated.
Very emotional in Germany. Especially when it comes to food.
Yeah, I know.
Well, to be fair, I don't think sunny-side eggs exist in Germany. I mean, eggs is not an alien concept, but sunny-side, that's pretty American.
You think it's just an American thing?
Now
I feel like an even bigger asshole because I just assumed that that was, you know, an international, like, sunny-side-up egg. Who doesn't have
those? They have it in England.
Well, you know, in German culture, though, it would have been proper for you to drink the tears from her eyes. That's actually part of
it. Okay, so that's what I did wrong. She maybe was tearing, and then once I drank it, she would have served me breakfast.
Yeah, didn't you notice there was no salt shaker on the table?
Okay, moving on.
How was Australia? How was the land down under?
Australia is incredible. We have super good friends in this amazing band called Architecture in Helsinki, which I hope you've heard of.
Yeah, they're on Moshi Moshi. They're actually the poster. They're the poster in the living room. It was on the opposite side of where you guys were standing. It's an Architecture in Helsinki.
Oh, I remember that. Right. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. They are amazing friends. They're so nice. And every time we go to Australia, they spoil us. They're kind of nicer than they should be.
Yeah, we had a really nice time with them running around, going to different touristic points of interest and eating lots of awesome food.
They took us on a tour of the largest cricket and Australian rules football stadium.
Really?
In the world, yeah.
Which was a really big deal to them.
It's called the MCG. They had never done it before, so there was a live cricket game happening, and they like took us down to the field, and our friend Cameron from Architecture in Helsinki kissed the ground. He kissed
really?
The field. Yeah.
It was like that big a deal.
Yeah.
He loves Australian rules football. People out there love Australian rules football.
Where would you go that would be like considered holy ground? You'd kiss the ground, you'd be so excited.
Everywhere that we walk.
Yeah.
Okay.
We kiss the ground. Yeah.
All we do in this life is walk from one little tiny patch of holy ground to the next.
Fantastic.
Does it take a while for you to walk places? If you stop and kiss the ground every step you take?
Oh, we prostrate. That's what you're asking.
Gotcha. Definitely. So where will you be walking in this year? Where will you be headed?
We'll be walking all the way across
Canada. We'll be walking. We'll be dancing.
Well, we will be dancing across Canada, across most of the United States, across Colombia, across Mexico, across Europe, and beyond.
Wow. When are you coming back to New York?
We're coming back to New York in March.
Fantastic.
It's not announced. It's not officially announced yet,
okay.
So I'll wait for that to be an official announcement. Sometime in March, we will be in New York.
Are you playing South by Southwest?
Yes.
Fantastic. You know, funny, I don't know if funny, but interesting fact... Claire, I saw your second show ever with Yacht. Was that South by Southwest 2 years ago?
Fader Fort, right?
And I was like, oh, hey, for all, you know, Claire and I met in 2005 through our mutual friend B, And then I didn't see you again until I was like, oh, that's Claire on stage. Hey, Claire. You're like, yeah, I joined a band. Or another band.
Yep.
That wasn't Weirdo Bagheera.
That was a very, very early. Oh, Weirdo Bagheera. That was a very early show. Yacht is was not really fully formed as a conceptual unit until a little bit later.
Now we are
a new version, a new...
A better version.
A new vision.
A new vision.
Team Yacht, if you will.
Every 6 months, we sort of freak out and have to completely change the band, and that was one of the changes, and then there was another change, and now there's an even newer change.
So why don't you tell us about the mix you made?
Well, Claire, do you want to talk about it?
Oh, Claire made it.
No? No, I made it.
Oh.
But Claire was there. I contributed conceptually. Spiritually, more so. Well, my presence. It's a mix of songs. I think that they sort of speak for themselves. They're songs that we like, that we listen to. We make mixes fairly often, but this one is specially catered to you and your time slot.
Oh, an afternoon delight, if you will.
Yeah, it's totally a little bit of afternoon delight.
Wow, really?
A little bit of a journey through the decades.
I like it.
Sex in the afternoon.
So we
this mix is entitled Sex in the Afternoon.
Done. So I just want to thank you guys for calling in. I know you're busy. Hopefully see you soonish, sooner than later.
Yes. Yeah.
And thanks. Enjoy the Northwest.
Right now,
oh,
we're going to go inside of a restaurant where you make the pancakes yourself.
Oh, really? What's it called?
Yeah.
Shout them out.
It's called Slappy Cakes. We've never been here before, so it could be terrible. So I don't know if they deserve a shout out, but it's called Slappy Cakes.
All right.
We're going to make triangle-shaped pancakes here
course.
In Portland, Oregon.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. So that was just Yacht calling in from Portland, Oregon. Slappy Cakes. So we're gonna close the show with their mix.
Yeah, we still got plates of food here, and we gotta get to them before they get cold.
So I want to thank our guest Jordana Rothman for coming on and talking to us about her predictions, and thank you to Team Yacht for taking time to give us a call. Next week we'll be back, I believe, with Antipop Consortium in studio.
Food guest, still a mystery.
Always, it's
week to week.
It's week to week.
The Russian roulette of the food world. Big shout out to Whole Foods for hooking us up with sponsorship and our ingredients for dinner tonight. I'm going to go live in that cheese corner on Houston and see what happens.
Big shout out to Jack and Zane RecTech for making us sound good. And thank you to Roberta's, who raised $5,000 in their fundraiser for Brooklyn Grange on Friday. So thanks to everyone who came out and supported.
Yeah, it's coming and it's going to be beautiful.
All right, so here we go. Yacht, what did they say? Sex in the Afternoon mix exclusively on Snacky Tunes.
Gunstag. Gunstag. Oh, morning when I wake up, she may be gone, I don't know. And if we make up just to break up, I'll carry on. Oh yes I will. Me and my arrow, do-do-do-do-do-do-do, straight up the narrow. Wherever we go, everyone knows it's me and my arrow.
Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Miss Pretty is back on this J-Hawk beat. I'm riding shotgun, your hoes in the backseat. With a swag so neat, no need to compete. Oh, you looking at my pockets, what they say? Frankie D, I know you heard about me. Stay fly, stay clean, and you always gon' catch me in the Hell's Bell seat. Only fucks with the best, only roll with the illest. Chelsea and City Boss, bitches, we the realest. Hate all you want, cause I love my haters. Sick of you a trendsetter, I am the creator. Now let me grab my Louis Gucci and my Juicy. Mac red lips like I love Lucy. Diamonds on my nails, diamonds on my necklace. Got your niggas saying, damn, bro, you a bad bitch. Cause I'm a first round draft pick. Candy painted nails, and I'm so damn famous. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. My diva is a female version of a hustler, of a hustler, of a hustler. I shine like luster, I'm sweet like honey mustard. Got you bitches nervous and scared, you in a fluster. Jimmy Choo and Prada, Moschino and Bogata. Got quite a big selection, you hoes, I got nada. And I can't forget my couture, juicy and my scotter. And my body so covered like the Sierra Nevadas. And excuse me if my swag is on point. I'm so damn hot, I'm at my melting point. And I'm long hair, don't care. I walk through the room, all the boys just stare. Y'all know I'm the baddest, ain't no need to compare. I'll make you drop to the floor, you'll need medical care. And you can call me Smurf at third. Hey, fuck what you heard, sit back and learn. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. Candy painted nails with my Betsy Johnson bag. Lips smacked up, make you wanna bite my swag. I can't resist.
The sun is down. The sun is down. The sun is down. It's getting so dark. The sun is down. The sun is down. The sun is down. It's getting so dark. Ooh, where the stars? Where the moon? The stars should shine the river. Maybe the river's even too cold for them. The sun is down. The sun is down. The sun is down. It's getting so dark. The sun is down. The sun is down. The sun is down. It's getting so dark. Throwing away the mirror in the river. I don't need it.
No.
I can walk without it.
Yeah.
It's time for me to go and walk.
Checkbook, so I ran off to the bank, took out all the money, and I loaded up on crank. Then I went across the country spreading fire and disease, prayed to the devil down on my bloody knees, and I bought another record and committed suicide. Burning Rob, Burning Rob, yeah, it was rock and roll that drove me to the other side. Burning Rob, Burning Rob, rock and roll made me not believe in God. Don't stop, rock and roll, kill a cop, burn and rob.
everybody that ever was alive.